This is Solve It for Kids.
Well, hello, my incredible and amazing and oh-so-curious friends. It is fantastic to see you. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using critical thinking, cooperation, creativity, and curiosity. Right now, please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. How are you?
I am fantastic, Jennifer. So good to be back for another episode of Solve It for Kids.
It's amazing. And today's guest is kind of out of the box. So this is going to be really fun.
Well, I want to see what this out-of-the-box expert is all about. So let's spin the wheel, right?
Yes, spin the wheel.
How can we learn if Bigfoot actually exists?
How can we learn if Bigfoot actually exists? Well, I think we know because he's in all those commercials.
Yes, that's not what they're talking about, though. But some people, this is a great episode because we're going to talk about what's real science, what's not real science, and how to keep your mind open for science that you may not know a whole bunch about.
I think that's really important, especially nowadays where we see a lot of people, especially a lot of adults, have closed minds when it comes to science.
Well, this one, get ready to have everybody open their minds up because we are happy to welcome Leah Fisher, who is a cryptozoologist and author, and she is going to talk to us all about Bigfoot and other science things that you may not even know about or believe in.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show, Leah.
Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for having me. I'm just so tickled to be on with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you, especially because you're going to help us solve the problem. How can we learn if Bigfoot exists?
Exactly, which is a huge, exciting question about a very big creature. So as Jed said, I am a cryptozoologist. And what a cryptozoologist does is we look for legendary animals that might be real today. And there are hundreds of these animals that might exist, and Bigfoot is one of them, the Loch Ness Monster is one of them, the Chupacabra, the Jersey Devil, all sorts of fun stuff. And some of these cryptids have actually been found. So the idea that we might be able to find Bigfoot is not so out there. It is a possibility.
Now, Leah, I thought the Bigfoot mystery was solved. I mean, I saw this commercial where Flo is sitting on a log talking to Bigfoot, and he's upset because she doesn't know that his name is Daryl.
That's exactly right. And Bigfoot, if we do find Bigfoot and call him Bigfoot, he may be like, why are you calling me that? My name is Timothy.
well, that's what I think is really cool. So let's talk about, can you define cryptid for those of us who may not know exactly what that means? What is a cryptid?
Yeah, so cryptid, and it's been a word that was first used in about 1984, but it did not get into the dictionary until about 2 years ago. And the Latin root of it is crypto, which means hidden. So cryptid means hidden animal. And cryptozoology is the study of hidden animals, meaning animals that we think are real, but they have not yet been proven by science.
I got to tell you, Jennifer, I'm getting depressed here. To think that I am older than a science.
Oh, well, hey. I mean, the thing about science, as you know, from all of the scientists we have interviewed, is that it changes. And there's new science that is being discovered all of the time. So don't feel bad.
Okay. Leah, how did you get into this field of study?
Yeah, you know, up until about 10 years ago, I had no idea what a cryptid was. And I just happened to be reading a newspaper article about someone who put together a hunting party to go to Alaska to find the Otter Man. And I thought, who is the Otter Man and what do these people want with it? And so I researched Otter Man and it was introduced as a cryptid. And I said, I've never heard of a cryptid. I know a lot about myths and mythology, but I knew nothing about cryptids and cryptozoology. And so once I started researching cryptids, it just opened up this whole world of fascinating animals that might be living today, but we just haven't found them yet.
I mean, that is just so cool. And I do have to say, as a few years ago, I visited Scotland with my husband, and we were on a tour, and your options were go to this museum or go on a ship across the Loch Ness Lake, you know. And I went, yes, please. So as we're on this boat going across, I was like scanning the water, right? Looking for little ripples and everything. And I was like, oh, I see something. My husband's like, okay, you are a children's author. You just want to see something. And I said, you never know, right? So here, talking to you, you never know what you might see.
Absolutely. And I love that you bring up the Loch Ness Monster, because people talk about cryptozoology as being a pseudoscience. Yes. Along the lines of ufology, which is a search for UFOs, or ghost hunting, which is a search for ghosts. But the Loch Ness Monster, real scientists are still searching for her. And about 2 years ago, they did a brand new study of the water in the loch to see if they could get a new kind of DNA evidence called eDNA, environmental DNA. Because a lot of people believe that Nessie might be an old plesiosaur dinosaur left over from the Ice Age.
Yep.
So they did a new scan of the loch, trying to find eDNA that would prove that there is plesiosaur DNA in the loch. They did not find dinosaur DNA, but they did find giant eel DNA. Well, supposedly there are no giant eels in Loch Ness. So maybe Nessie is a giant eel that is hiding in the loch.
Wow. Now, you've said that we've actually discovered and found some animals that at one time were thought to be cryptids or just fictions of people's imagination.
Absolutely. So there are many animals that are considered animals of legend until they are actually discovered, because people are seeing these animals even though they haven't yet been proven by science. And so stories come about with these animals, even though they don't actually yet exist. The very first cryptid that was determined to be real is the okapi, and it is known as the forest giraffe. It was discovered in 1901, and it looks like it was discovered in Central Africa, and it looks like half giraffe, half zebra.
I'm serious.
One of the reasons why so many stories were created about this the okapi before they actually discovered it is that people who saw it would talk about its foot long tongue that would come out and wash its ears and its eyes. So it would like bathe its own head with its tongue. And so when people told stories about this half giraffe, half zebra animal that was cleaning its face with this long tongue, people were like, no, that doesn't exist, but it actually does. And we did find it. Another one is the platypus. So the platypus, right, if you look at it, it has the bill of a duck, the tail of a beaver, and the feet of an otter. And
yes,
when people first saw it in 1799, it was considered a hoax because they thought that someone had taken all these different parts of different animals and glued them onto one animal. Because people thought there's no way that this animal can exist until scientists actually discovered one. And the fun thing about the platypus, it is one of the very few venomous mammals. It has venom in its feet.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
So talk to us a little bit about Bigfoot. Like, how would we know, I mean, if it's real or he, I don't know if they say he or she. I think we usually refer to him as a him, but I guess we don't know.
We do often refer to Bigfoot as a him. However, I'll go into the evidence now of Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
So the way that you prove the existence of any new species is the way that you would prove the existence of Bigfoot, meaning you actually need to find one. But along the way, you want to make an educated guess that Bigfoot exists. And the way you do that is you find evidence of his or her possible existence. So we actually do have some possible evidence of Bigfoot. And we the first one is the Patterson-Gimlin film, which you can look up online. And this is the most clear video of Bigfoot. It is an actual video of Bigfoot, maybe Bigfoot, taken in 1967 in Northern California. And they call this Bigfoot Patty because they believe that she's a female based upon what she looks like. And, you know, for people who don't believe in Bigfoot, they say that this is a hoax. The video is a hoax. However, there are a couple of reasons why people believe it's not a hoax. The first reason is there are Hollywood special effects artists who were working in Hollywood in the 60s who have looked at this video and they say there is no way that that is a person in an animal suit. The technology did not exist in 67 to make a suit that good.
Wow.
And they're like, if somebody did make that suit, they should have gone to Hollywood and been a special effects artist.
Oh, they missed out on their dream job.
Right, exactly. And just the way, and the other reason is that, so if you look at the anatomy of this Bigfoot, it's a female. And people think if you were to do a big hoax on Bigfoot, why would you make Bigfoot a female? Because we think of Bigfoot as a male. And also people have evaluated the film and they see that it is not in any way fudged or a hoax. It is an actual video. But I think the most compelling evidence is that actual special effects artists look at this video and say there's no way that that's a suit. And the way that you can tell is that most suits have, you know, heads that you take off because it gets hot. Well, when you turn your head, the fur in the back of the neck moves differently than on the body because it's different.
That makes sense.
Whereas if you look at this video, when Bigfoot turns her head, there's no line in the back. And the final thing is that you can actually see rippling muscles on her legs as she walks.
Wow.
So that is one maybe compelling piece of evidence.
What other evidence have they found? That's pretty incredible, but there must be more.
Oh, absolutely. So another really fun one, which is actually kind of spooky, is something called the Sierra Sounds. And these are actual recordings of what Bigfoot sounds like in the wild, made by a gentleman named Ron Moorhead. And if you go online, you can listen to the Sierra Sounds, and they are supposedly the actual howls and language of Bigfoot. Now, again, you can say, hey, that's a hoax. That is just people yelling in the background. However, people have analyzed these audio recordings, and several people have said that there is no way that the human voice box can make that kind of sound, because it goes from such a high and low octave range. Mm-hmm. And then there was a retired Navy cryptolinguist whose job it is to identify foreign languages.
Yep.
And he has analyzed these audio recordings, and he has said that it is an actual language, and it is not anything created by the human voice.
Wow.
That is incredible. Isn't it incredible?
It blows me away.
So again, like, is it a hoax or is it real? There's evidence or belief systems either way.
Wow.
And then probably the final one, Jed, did you want to say something? I'm kind of going on because I get so excited.
No, I'm just amazed. You know, another language that I'll probably would never be able to learn.
Right.
So maybe someday they'll be teaching Bigfoot language in school.
You never know.
And another really fun, you know, evidence is hair that has been found in the wilderness that people think belongs to Bigfoot. Now, you know, some people call cryptozoology a science or pseudoscience, but as I've mentioned, there are some real scientists who are trying to discover Bigfoot. And one of the most well-known ones is Dr. Jeff Meldrum. He is a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho University. And he has gathered hair samples that he believes might be from Bigfoot. And the one way that we can prove the existence of Bigfoot is if we get DNA evidence of a new species. Well, these hair samples don't give evidence of a new species. They give zero DNA evidence. He has been unable to pull DNA evidence from these hair samples. So he has 15 hair samples that are unidentifiable with any animal in the known kingdom.
That's interesting.
So if, like scientists, not that I could figure it out, but scientists, if that was like make-believe, if it was an artificial type of hair, they'd be able to see that and say, no, there's no DNA because this is made of cotton or polyester or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They can identify, you know, if it's just something from clothing or if it's actually an organic material.
Yeah. Or if it's related to some other animal that someone kind of placed there. You know, what I find interesting about all this is, yes, I mean, pseudoscience meaning fake science, but the fact that they're using real scientists to try and prove this or disprove it, right? Either way.
Absolutely.
I find that really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, kind of pseudoscience versus real science and why should we believe, or maybe we should just have an open mind?
Yeah. So one great thing when you use science is that you want to be skeptical, meaning you don't just want to believe in something without evidence. You want to have an open mind. You want to be skeptical. You want to be able to look at the evidence, to really let the evidence speak to you about whether it is real or whether it is fake. So the theory is that Bigfoot might exist. That is a hypothesis, that Bigfoot exists. Many people say that Bigfoot is an undiscovered ape species in North America. That's the hypothesis. To take it further, they believe that Bigfoot is a Gigantopithecus ape from China that came up and crossed over into North America over the land bridge 20,000 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
So that's a pretty firm scientific hypothesis.
Right.
Now, a hypothesis is just an idea that you come up with based upon limited evidence. And from there, you try to find more evidence to prove that theory. So while we're searching for Bigfoot, you're just doing what any other scientific hypothesis does, is you create an idea based upon some evidence, and then you go on an adventure to try to prove if that hypothesis is real or not. And whether that adventure is to prove that Bigfoot is real, or whether that adventure is to prove that some other unknown species exists, because we do find 16,000 new species of plant, animal, insect, and mammal every year.
Wow.
So as you go on this scientific adventure to prove the existence of a new species, you may not find Bigfoot, or you might, or you may find some other species that we didn't know existed, which does happen. There have been scientists who have been searching for Bigfoot, and they've discovered some totally new species that they didn't realize was out in the rainforest of North America.
That's so cool. Hey, if you have a challenge, is there some way the kids can get involved in the search for Bigfoot or other kind of species?
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, one of the best ways to find Bigfoot is to get evidence. And one of the best, I totally forgot to talk about the footprint, which is one of the biggest forms of evidence. So, when you go into the forest, you might think that you see a Bigfoot footprint, which will be a really big footprint that is too big to belong to a person. And if you think that you see one of these footprints, you can actually make a plaster cast of it. And you will just, I'll give instructions that you can follow on their website. But you basically put plaster into what you think is this footprint. You let it dry. And then later, you can examine this plaster footprint for clues. And there are some things that can tell you if it is a human footprint, a hoax, or an actual footprint of a possible ape. And that is that on the sole of the plaster, you might see basically like a fingerprint, but mm-hmm. on the sole of the foot. It's called dermal ridges. And the second thing is in the middle of the footprint, you might see a little ridge that goes right across it. And this is called a mid-tarsal break, because apes, when they walk, they can just lift up their heel because their foot bends right in the middle. Oh. Our foot only bends at the toes. So you can try it. Try to lift your heel up, just your heel. Well, normally you can't. It'll just, your foot will just bend at the toes. But apes, their foot bends in the middle. So if you happen to make a plaster cast of this footprint and it has a mid-tarsal break, you know that you are looking at the footprint of an ape that is roaming America.
Wow. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
And could a kid have fun and practice by going out and making a cast of their own footprint?
That would be a great idea. Yes, you definitely want to practice, because if you actually do find a Bigfoot footprint, you want to know what you're doing. So you can always go out into the woods with your parents and make a good deep footprint, and then you can practice pouring the plaster in there and letting it dry and examining your own footprint for clues.
Or you could also make a footprint cast of your whole family and then see if everybody, and take it to your friend or whatever, see if they can figure out whose is whose. This sounds like so much fun.
Yes.
So everybody visit our website, solveitforkids.com, because we will have all of these directions and also what to look for. And then every single link and video that Leah gave us, we will make sure that we put also on the website page, so you can go and check this out yourself. Because we would love to hear what you think about pseudoscience and Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and the Chupacabra.
Yeah. And kids, if you make a cast of your parents' footprint and one of them has that bending in the middle thing that Leah was talking about, don't worry, they still love you. They can still be family.
And believe it or not, there is a very small percentage of humans who do have that mid-tarsal break. So you might be one of them.
That's interesting. Well, thanks so much for being on our Solve for Kids show today, Leah. I learned so much about science, and, you know, I'm so excited to try and go back to Loch Ness one day.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much for having me, everybody. And remember that Bigfoot believes in you.
Jennifer, that was a really, really fun episode. Leah is amazing.
She is. And, you know, if nothing else, she expanded everybody's mind, I think. I mean, wow, some of the stuff we talked about. And I don't know about you, but I would love to see the Loch Ness Monster someday. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be really, really cool. It'd be cool to see Bigfoot. It'd be cool to see the Chupacabra. No, Chupacabra's kind of scary, I think. But who knew that there was that scientists were discovering and identifying new species all the time?
I know. It's amazing. So, kids, if you want to learn more about what a cryptozoologist is and what they do and what they study, go to our website, solveitforkids.com. You'll see some cool pictures that Leah has shown us. And also, there'll be some really neat links so you can go and do your own research and make your own decision about this.
That's fantastic. Oh, I can't wait. This has been such an exciting season so far. I can't wait till our next guest. So until then, see you guys next week for another exciting episode of
Solve It for Kids.